Okay, our next speaker is Dr. Magna Arora. Mm-hmm. Thank you. She's a professor of administrative sciences at Roosevelt University in Schaumburg, Illinois. She has a PhD in health policy from the University of Illinois in Chicago, not the one in Champaign. And with that, I'll let you. Oh, she's talking about online veterinary pharmacies. If anybody in here is a practicing veterinarian, please pay attention because I know we all self-medicate.
Okay, so I just want to add on to that. So I have a graduate degree in health policy, and I have nothing to do with veterinary pharmacy. So I'll be honest, I don't even practice as a pharmacist, although I do have the degree. But this is my collaborator, Melissa Hogan, who's worked in veterinary pharmacy for years, and we started looking at compounding pharmacies about a year ago for human beings, for human consumption, and, you know, especially following the New England outbreak. And so we talked about that, and then that talk interestingly turned out towards pets and animals, as is Melissa's interest. And so we started talking about that, and we said, you know what, it would be very nice to see, you know, what regulations are out there and what's going on. Interestingly, we didn't really find a lot of papers out there. So what I'm going to do is provide sort of a landscape on the regulations and tell you really how bad it is, which if you didn't know that already. I just wanted to separate the dispensing and the compounding aspects, and anybody who's a practicing veterinarian will probably know that. But veterinary pharmacy is a specialized area of pharmacy. For those who don't have a pharmacy background, academic pharmacy is really looking into incorporating veterinary pharmacy into their teaching. So several schools or colleges of pharmacy now have either an elective course on veterinary pharmacy, or they bring in somebody who's going to talk about it. Because animals, even though we may have the same drugs for animals and human beings, because of their size, the dosages, and the administration can be completely different. Now, in traditional pharmacy schools, they don't really teach that. And so it's important that when they're out in practice, when our students go out and practice as pharmacists, that they're aware of it, because increasingly now retail pharmacies are seeing fills for a lot of veterinary patients. So typically it is still retail that we've seen. We do have reports anecdotally from Joe Lasco, Walgreens, CVS, filling medications. A lot of them pass as human scripts, so sometimes the pharmacist isn't even aware that this is for an animal. They're just filling it as if they would fit for another human. But it's also increasingly mail order and online now. So again, for those of you practicing, you may have heard questions from your patients, whether can I buy from this site, can I buy from that site kind of thing. There are very varied roles that pharmacists can play as veterinary pharmacists. A lot of it can involve medication selection, the same thing as we do for human beings. And then in a lot of cases, they can help with some inventory and formulary control. So online pharmacies are really three major categories. So there's independents. Basically, these have no physical pharmacy. They're just purely online. They might actually have a room or warehouse somewhere, and they might be compounding or dispensing or preparing their meds in there. So it's really not a physical space that you can actually visit. Yikes. There's the clicks and mortar pharmacy, which is sort of a nice little take on the bricks and mortar, such as your Walgreens, CVS, but now you can buy from them online as well as you can go into the store. So it's like, imagine a Blockbuster, if you will. You have the online and the store version. And then you have your independent, some of your independent neighborhood pharmacies, which are increasingly few now that the chains have come about, but they might have their own online version or their online store where people can buy those. There have been some surveys done with patients or owners of pets to ask them why they would purchase from online pharmacies, and just the same as they would purchase for themselves, it's convenience. It's 24/7. You can go online. The good thing is you do get to see the prices, so you can compare with what your vet or your physician or your pharmacist would offer you. There is medication information online. On some websites, there is some pretty decent medication information out there. Whether it's comprehensive, whether it's the best information out there, I can't tell. There is customer service, which is the case everywhere, not probably at your friendly neighborhood pharmacy. So all of those reasons. However, there are disadvantages to online pharmacies. And one of the biggest disadvantages in the past year has been credit card abuse and fraud, where people's credit card information has been taken and they never received the medication. Actually, that is sort of a milder form of abuse and fraud. Trust me, there's worse things that have happened. You could get expired or adulterated medicines that could actually kill the pets. Use of cyber doctors is increasingly becoming a problem because it sort of compromises with the patient-physician relationship, or in this case, the animal-owner-veterinarian relationship. And then a lot of misinformation can spread through these websites. Interestingly, I was reading this case about this woman who was recommended a medication which was an anti-cancer agent for her dog, who seemed listless and weak. And apparently the site said that these were vitamins and that your dog needs them. And so she went to a veterinarian and said, you know, is this what I need? And they said, no, this is a cancer drug. So, you know, a lot of misinformation can spread. Again, if you want that story, I can get it to you. So in the regulatory framework, we really have three levels of regulation going on. None of these talk to each other, by the way. So there's federal, so your FDA. You do have some states, and I'll tell you what the state boards of pharmacy have to do with this, and then there might be some local regulation. Multiple agencies of jurisdiction. Now, pharmacy is one of the most regulated professions in the United States. Everything goes through a schedule. Everything has to go through, you know, some sort of keeping inventory and things like that. So from the FDA's perspective, they want that drugs be dispensed or compounded by licensed personnel. Fair enough, that's the most basic role. The Internet Drug Sales Plan was sort of adopted, and this is a very loose term saying adopted, in July 1999, which targets healthcare fraud, sale of unapproved, counterfeit, adulterated, illicit drugs, etc., that are sold without a valid prescription. Since between 2009 and 2013, thousands of drugs are sold without valid prescriptions through online pharmacies. So the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine, which obviously a few are familiar with, regulates the manufacture and distribution of food additives and drugs that may be given to animals because it considers that medications for food animals as food additives to the human food supply. And they will take action against dispensing pharmacies in very limited circumstances. Again, there is a requirement that there be a valid veterinarian patient-client relationship for such prescribing and dispensing of medications, especially if it's extra label use in animals. Then we have the FTC, which sort of looks at more of the information that's presented, not the actual dispensing or compounding, so they don't really have that to do with it. But if there's any fake or misleading claims made about products, so if you have any herbal supplements, for example, and they're making all sort of outrageous claims, then the FTC can possibly step in and look at it. The Drug Enforcement Administration, from their perspective, they only want to look at narcotics. So, again, controlled substances, that's exactly what they will concern themselves with and limit themselves to. And then there is some sort of regulation by the U.S. Customs Service, because if they are being imported from, let's say, Canada or somewhere, then the U.S. Customs Service comes into play. And the U.S. Postal Service, too, because especially if you're thinking online pharmacies, they're mailing out the drugs. So they have a little bit of regulation to do with it. Not significant, though. From the state boards of pharmacy perspective, now, typically the state boards have never liked federal interference in pharmacy, and so the state boards like to be autonomous bodies. So if you went and asked a state board of pharmacy who should have the authority to regulate and inspect these pharmacies and the facilities, the state board will say, we do. And they don't like any sort of federal. And this plays itself out because each agency is not very well equipped to do that. Each of them has lack of manpower, and each of them complains they don't have enough empowerment to go ahead and do this. Hence, we see all these problems. So they can enforce regulations for licensure, of course, because you do have to have that pharmacist in that pharmacy, have that license prominently displayed. If they're doing controlled substances, the narcotics license needs to be up there. And then for state regulatory compliance, the regular pharmacies, again, if they're storefronts, they will get inspected. Not very frequently, though. From the other perspective, there's also the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, which is incidentally located in Chicago, where I'm from. It's an organization representing all the state boards, and what they've done is in the past couple of years, they've come up with this sort of a SEAL program. So every single website or online pharmacy goes through a certain checklist from the NABP's perspective. So they make sure that this pharmacy is legit, they're not fraudulent, they're getting their drugs from the correct supply, they're doing all the right things. And so once all that is done, once all those boxes are checked, they give them what is known as a verified internet pharmacy practice. I don't know what the S stands for, but or the seal, I guess. So that's the VIP seal, that's for human pharmacies, and if it's a veterinary pharmacy, then they'll give them the vet whip seal. So that's what it looks like. So every time I get asked a question, should I buy from this website, I'll pretty much almost always end up saying look for the seal. That is not to say that that is your gold standard in everything. Sometimes a pharmacy may be VIPS accredited, but it could fall under those standards, and it may take some time for NABP to catch up with that. So again, it's not the gold standard, but at least it tells you that it went through a certain process. Just a little bit on compounding. So again, 4 out of 10 veterinarians usually prescribe compounded medications almost on a weekly basis. Now they can compound it themselves, or it goes to a pharmacy to get compounded. The FDA really limits that in terms of it should not be from bulk ingredients. And compounding is really, the rule of thumb is one patient or one client at a time. So if you are compounding for 15 or 20 clients, that's not compounding, that's manufacturing. And they're very, very strict about it, but they're very strict in regulation only. This is the exact problem that we saw with the New England pharmacy that did the compounding, was they were actually manufacturing, they weren't really compounding. You know, what really happens after that is sort of up in the air. From a case study perspective, so I just wanted to throw in an example of Frank's Pharmacy, which was in Ocala, I suppose, Florida. And they'd been compounding for years now, and most people have probably heard about this case that happened. 21 polo ponies that were supposed to compete died because of a selenium overdose. However, what most people might not know is that in 2005, they had received a slap on the wrist from the FDA, which was a letter saying that you're manufacturing, you're not compounding, you need to take care of this. Chances are the letter was ignored and no follow-up action was taken, either by the FDA or the Florida State Board of Pharmacy. So see what I mean when I say it's problematic in the sense that these two don't work with each other, they don't cooperate with each other. And also, each of them says they would like to have, they would like to be more empowered, and they truly are, but they don't enact on those. So none of those agencies did that, and hence we had that tragedy out there. So compounding pharmacies really fill gaps in medication needs when manufactured products are not available. Again, there's a clear distinction right there. Or when you have a manufactured product, but you need to mix two manufactured products because you want something unique for your client. That's when compounding comes into effect. Quality and efficacy are almost always a concern when you're talking about compounding because you don't know where they're being compounded, especially with those online pharmacies. FDA oversight, like I said, again, is minimal. Last year, I ended up talking to a commission for from the FDA who was a pharmacist and said, and, you know, we went back and forth on this compounding issue, and because it was so hot last year, it was a good discussion. But the gist of it was, he said, well, the FDA has had a bill for many years sitting around saying we should be able to go ahead and inspect these pharmacies, but it was never passed. And so the FDA has never been empowered to do that. However, even if they were, would they actually be doing that, considering the significant lack of manpower and resources that the FDA currently faces? Again, it is expected that state boards fill in or step in to fill the regulatory gap, but when the state boards and the FDA or those departments aren't even talking to each other, they don't know which gaps to fill in, right? If, for example, that Frank's Pharmacy case, if the state board wasn't aware that they had received the letter like that, or vice versa, they wouldn't know what to do about it. So again, considering the significant lack of literature, I can give you more sites on this, but online pharmacies are really subject to very minimal regulatory oversight. That is not to say that the regulation doesn't exist. It just goes to say that it exists, but it's never really enforced. There are several concerns like fraud going on with money. That's probably the least of all that could happen to you, but you could get expired, adulterated medications. In some cases, it has been found that the medicine has arrived and had none of the active ingredients, or none of the ingredients actually mentioned that were supposed to be in there. So manufacturing, which could go on under the guise of compounding, and then probably a lack of the valid veterinary-patient-client relationship. Same thing from the human side, lack of that physician-patient relationship. And so again, those regulations, while they are good and they exist, they really mean very little in terms of safety of, you know, whether it's human beings or animals, because there is, like I said, there is actually zero enforcement at this point in time. So that's pretty much what I had, and I'll take any questions.
5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, from the, I honestly cannot speak to the state attorney's general perspective because, quite honestly, I have not been associated with those. Our work is limited to the state boards of pharmacy because we really expect that they will go in and inspect these pharmacies. And if it's an online pharmacy that has some sort of physical location or presence in our state, we want our state board to go ahead and inspect like they would inspect our regular Walgreens. However, the problem is that really does not happen. But the state doesn't want the federal government to come in and do anything about it. So this sort of, you know, relationship exists. And we've tried to talk to, well, not in veterinarian cases, because this is the first time I'm talking to veterinarians, but we've tried to talk to physicians, and we've said, you know, spread the information out, spread the word out, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, but... I completely agree. There are so many gaps in terms of those communications that need to happen. Also in terms of turf wars that can happen because, you know, somebody, some agency perceives another agency is coming in and telling them what to do, but that's not necessarily the case. It's not that the state boards lack necessarily the resources to go ahead and inspect because it's technically part of their job to do that. But the fact is that it doesn't really happen, which is what we've seen time and again. And again, healthcare is almost always reactive. It's never proactive. Even though we know that a problem can happen, we're not going to do anything about it until a tragedy comes forth. And in this case, even though there have been, you know, several tragedies, apparently they're not enough to shake up the system. So. But yeah. All right. Thank you.
I was remiss in not having us clap for Catherine, so let's do that. Please. I think, Tom, your point is states, what the states can control versus what the federal government control goes back to, I think, 1789, so we have made no progress. Okay, our next speaker is going to be speaking on the presence of quinolone resistance in swine and enterics flora, and hence the environment. Oops.